Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Today is March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all who are celebrating. And the first order, and a quorum is present, and the first order of business is approval of the minutes. Chair Scott?
I would move the minutes of March 12th, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. I'm now going to read our the notice about hearing decorum. So to ensure a productive and safe environment where everyone can follow the proceedings today, we ask all attendees to maintain a high standard of decorum. No signs are permitted in the hearing room. To keep the focus on the testimony, please do not applaud or make other audible demonstrations. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior are not permitted. To ensure we get to hear from everyone, testifiers should limit their remarks to the specified time. For safety reasons, do not stand or sit in the aisles. If you need seating accommodations, please alert the sergeant staff wearing gold ties. If you were issued an entrance ticket, please keep it with you. You may need it for re-entry if you leave the room. State troopers and sergeant staff are stationed throughout the room to ensure the safety of all participants. So we will start today. We have a very full agenda, so we're going to try to move right along. And the first bill on our agenda today is House File 3479. Representative Freiberg is here. And I am going to, since he's not on the committee, the chair will move that House File 3479 be re-referred to the General Register. There is also an author's amendment, and I assume that you would like that moved right away, Representative Freiberg. So we're going to move the A2 amendment that is in your packets to put the bill in the order in which the author would like to discuss it. Do members feel they need any more information about the A2 before we adopt it? Not seeing anything. So all in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is adopted. So we have the bill in the order in which we want to discuss it. And Representative Freiberg, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, Co-Chair Scott. This bill makes it clear that the right of a homeowner to postpone a mortgage foreclosure sale applies in two specific circumstances where there has been some legal ambiguity. It also clears up confusion regarding the length of a redemption period when a homeowner postpones a foreclosure sale and then files for bankruptcy. Finally, the bill makes clear that if the homeowner dies, the heirs have the right to postpone the sale and retain the home. That's just a brief summary. I did want to thank the Minnesota Bar Association, the Minnesota Credit Union Network, the Minnesota Land Title Association, Minnesota Realtors, and Bank In, which provided recommended language, which we have adopted. I did not, out of respect for the committee's time, I asked people not to testify, but I do have people available for questions if there are any.
All right. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Mr. Elwood is here to just for questions. Okay. All right. So is there any discussion to House File 3479 as amended? All right, I'm not seeing any questions, any discussion. So Representative Freiberg, any final words on the bill before we take a vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Scott. Appreciate the committee's consideration.
All right, thank you. So I will renew the motion that House File 3479 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is House File 4205, Representative Tabke. And this bill also has an author's amendment. And Representative Tabke, do you want us to, tell us about the, I don't know, which way do you prefer to do it? Do you want to tell us about the bill and then tell us what the amendment does, or should we just adopt it?
I would just adopt it, Madam Chair.
Okay, so it's sort of a technical amendment, more or less?
It is not a technical amendment. It definitely has some substance to it, but it gets the bill in the shape that I would like it to be in.
Okay, all right. Well, if I haven't already, I will move that House File 4205 be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. So this is going back to Public Safety. And I will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the order in which the author would like to discuss it. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. So we have the bill as amended before us. Representative Tapke, please go ahead and speak to the bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Chairs Liebling and Scott. I really appreciate you hearing this bill today. This is a really important topic that we, as Minnesotans, need to make sure that we are addressing and and working through here in the state. So as license plates are out in the public and as everyone is using, driving, getting from point A to point B, they have an expectation that the state of Minnesota is protecting their private data. So just as a level setting with your license plate, you have the license plate number, whether you paid your tabs, and what vehicle that is associated with are public-facing data. So anybody can have access to that data. But the owner of that vehicle, their address, their phone number, their personal information, those kinds of things are private data. And through Operation Metro Surge, what we found out was that our data is actually wide open, that many, many folks are able to access our data. And so this is a data privacy bill, and so what we found out through many things is that there are, I'll just give a good example of what's happening, is that folks from all across the country are accessing Minnesotans' data, and so we want to make sure that that is locked down and so that Minnesotans can trust that their private data is kept private and in the state of Minnesota. And so we have this bill today, big reason why this is important is that we have a, when police departments are handling this data correctly and using it for investigatory purposes, what is happening is one police department, and this is from ACLU data requests, one police department in the metro had, over the first 6 weeks of 2026, had 180 times where people's data was accessed via license plates. Another similar sized city in the metro had 425,000 times where license plate data was accessed. And so this is, to me, this is an unconscionable, needs to be dealt with, must be handled type issue where our private data is being accessed by many, many folks. And so what this bill will do is it makes anybody outside the state of Minnesota have to have a warrant in order to access our Minnesotans' private data. And so what we have found is happening is that anybody has access generally to our data, and there is no one that is being held accountable, transparency, giving a thumbs up or thumbs down, whether people should be accessing and are following our laws here in Minnesota. And so what this would do is make sure that you have to have a warrant before you access that data. Secondly, what that will do is make sure that on the private side of things, so when a business is using a license plate reader, that that data that they get to make sure that folks that have been trespassed or that organized retail theft, which we know is a thing that we've been working on here in Minnesota, that folks who are associated with that, that stores know when those people are there, but also when I go to a store, is should not be public data and available to everybody. And so this would wall that off so that that data cannot be disseminated or transferred to anyone else. And so this is what I think is a really good bill to make sure that we are able to continue with law enforcement, to make sure that law enforcement is able to access license plate data as necessary to solve crimes and for investigatory purposes, but also that we are protecting Minnesotans' private data. And with that, I have a testifier who, I don't know, would you like to testify or just answer questions? Okay. We have Mr. Beeler from the ACLU.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairs Liebling, Chair Scott, members of the committee. My name is John Beeler. I'm the Policy Counsel with the ACLU of Minnesota. We're testifying today in support of HF 4205 as amended. The function of these license plate readers far exceeds what was contemplated when the statute was written in 2015. What we've observed in the last decade is an explosion in the use of these systems, the use of and involvement of private companies, and the technological capacity to run a number of searches that would have been unfathomable to the 2015 legislature. The way the statute was designed envisioned that when one law enforcement agency, in-state or out, made a request for local law enforcement data, that the agency receiving requests would ensure compliance with our Data Practices Act, that it was related to an active criminal investigation, and that the requesting agency understood Minnesota data practices law and would adhere to them with the requested data. That is both general practice within the Data Practices Act and its practice within this statute, that those protections follow the data. That's already in law. Now, the introduction of third-party companies has, at best, obscured these obligations. The data collected by our local law enforcement ALPRs is stored in servers managed by these companies, and then without any back-end system management, it's shared with any law enforcement agency that also contracts with those companies. The companies also grant themselves relatively broad license and contractual exemptions in how they utilize that data to train their systems and develop their software. So what this has led to is quite a wide disparity in how our local law enforcement uses these systems. Representative Tapke noted that we sent out various data requests to local law enforcement agencies. One agency had 180 searches run against their systems in the last 30 days. Another agency had 425,000 searches run against their systems in a roughly 45-day period. So when we talked to, when I reached out to the police department A, and I spoke with them, and they said, "We like our system. 180 searches, that seems like a lot." I said, "In the grand scheme of things, you're doing quite well." They walked me through what they do well. And so they have data sharing agreements with every agency that has it. They know exactly what agencies have access to their system, and they can go in through these third-party companies, and they can manage who can search those systems. And so that is in-state and it's out-of-state law enforcement agencies, but they know who's accessing them. And that's done a really good job of restricting who has access to those license plate readers. What they do then, too, is they turn around and they publicize. They publish through a transparency portal every agency that can access their department, how many searches were run, what sort of hot lists they use. They use the BCA, and then I think they use a nationwide lost child locator. So what this bill does today, modernizes the ALPR statute to ensure it's reflective of how these public-private ALPR agreements work, ensure there's public disclosure of who our agencies are sharing data with, and ensuring that we have finally some public reporting of the private use of these ALPR data, these ALPR systems. And so that's disclosure of where they are and reporting on how many are in use, telling the public where they're being used, and then also ensuring that those private companies understand that they have data obligations as well. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. So we have another person who signed up to testify, Jeff Potts. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Potts. I am the Executive Director for the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. I'm here to testify on the roughly 300 police chiefs, hundreds of command staff members across the state. And I just want to share just a little bit of information about, the current situation with regard to ALPR. There has been, more use as this technology has become somewhat easier to acquire. And so we have several agencies throughout the state that are currently complying with the state law and using ALPR. I could go on and on about the successes with regard to the use of LPR. I'll use one just for the sake of brevity here today. January 21st of this year, a 7-year-old girl was abducted. She vanished from her bus stop in Zimmerman, Minnesota. Family, of course, is obviously distraught. Law enforcement gets involved in that child. Fortunately, was located 138 miles south near the Iowa border. LPR was used in that case to determine who committed that crime. That's probably one of the best examples, success stories of ALPR. Fortunately, the child was found. However, the suspect was charged with kidnapping and criminal sexual conduct in that case. LPR was a critical component in that investigation. There's dozens, if not hundreds, of other examples. Our concern with this bill, as it's written here today, is requiring audits to be done annually. Those cost about $2,500. We have seen some small agencies acquire this technology, while it may be a little bit cheaper than it was a few years ago, the $2,500 a year audit will make that impossible for them to continue. That is a large expense, particularly for a small agency. Additionally, the provisions on lines 2.10 through 2.14, I think there's some additional information. One of the vendors I've spoken with at great length is Flock. A lot of agencies use Flock. They use Axon. They use other vendors. I'm told that with regard to national data sharing, which seems to be a concern that's been brought forward here today, that as of May of 2025, Flock actually changed their system and no longer offers national data sharing. So there's no agencies in Minnesota currently that currently use national data sharing. However, they can enter into what has already been described as memorandums of understanding to do some data sharing as it relates to their LPR data. And so our position is we oppose this bill, certainly open to additional conversations about appropriate guardrails for LPR. However, the cost that this bill carries for small agencies is likely going to eliminate that technology in those agencies. As I talked about the case in January, the small agencies were involved in that abduction case. And again, I could rattle on about other positive or success stories with LPR. I think there may be other ways to accomplish what the author wants to accomplish. I think the vendors are keenly aware of concerns, privacy concerns, as Flock has already done by turning off the national lookup feature for agencies across the state. We're open to more conversation on this, but as it's written here today, we oppose the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for allowing us to testify here today.
Thank you, Mr. Potts. And just a question. You were just referred to lines 2.10 to 2.14 of the bill, and that's current language from my understanding of here.
So of the amendment, Madam Chair.
It's in the amendment?
2.10 to 2.14 of the amendment.
Of the amendment.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, thank you. All right. Is there any, did you want to say anything further, Representative Tapke, and then we'll open it up to member questions.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I just want to make sure that as everyone that I've talked with about this bill is that this is critical data that needs to be protected in Minnesota. And if there are things, as Chief Potts discussed with the audits, and that's a problem, very happy to change that. The reason why that's changed in the amendment is to make sure that we know how this is working and know what's happening so that we have more accurate current data on this. So I would like to at least to keep the first year in, but then biennial after that, I am very fine with, as that is an expense for folks. And so happy to make changes and continue to work on this bill if it is allowed to go forward into public safety. We can make some changes. I know there's a lot of overlap between the two committees and make sure that we get that done.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go to member questions and discussion. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing the bill. Appreciate you reaching out, trying to connect before the hearing today. Unfortunately, that didn't work out for us, but we can have the conversation here. So I appreciate what it is that you're trying to do, and it feels like legislator to legislator, it feels like this is a common thing we've seen this session because we have this truncated timeline. Deadlines are coming up, so you kind of just have to throw spaghetti at the wall and see what'll stick. In this case, I think you're asking the right questions, right? Technology is developing so rapidly that it's really increasingly taxing the capacity of government to keep up because government's meant to be deliberative and slow and reactive. But in this case, it just feels like the scope of the bill that you have before us today would potentially unintentionally truncate investigations like the one that we heard about from Mr. Potts. And so I'm going to be a no on this today. I think we should continue to have the conversation because I think the real issue is not, who has the data, but how it's accessed and on what terms and to what effect, just making sure that that's all tied in with the constitutional protections that I think you're aiming after. So I'll ask for a roll call, Madam Chair, and appreciate your work on this.
All right, a roll call's been requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Duran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this forward. There's some information that you expressed about personal data when it comes to license plate readers and grabbing their information. Can you tell me the difference between if a police officer actually enters in your license plates in their computer or a license plate reader? Can you tell me the data that's actually received from both of those and tell me the difference in that, please?
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Lieben and Representative Durant. So there is, I guess I'll ask a clarifying question on your question here. Are you asking, what type of data is received based on the different inputs on those kinds of things? Or are you asking about, what comes back?
Representative Durant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, because we're worried about the public data and private data, right, that's being received from these LPRs, right? Can you tell me what data is actually received when the LPR is used? What type of data is actually given to the peace officer? And can you tell me the difference between what the actual information you're going to get from an actual police officer typing in your license plate to the computer or the LPR? Can you tell me the difference and the information that's received from both of those?
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Lieben, thank you for that question. So there is, when you type it in, or whether it's from an ALPR, it depends on what the query is on that. And so it is that same data comes back. It is the very similar way of accessing those data. So to me, what this bill is about is the protecting private data, not necessarily. What this will do is help to reduce the mechanism that allows hundreds of thousands of these queries to happen on a day-to-day basis. But what this will do is Minnesotans have an expectation that their private data is private. And so we have a system that is wide open to a lot of folks, which is a very, very, what I think is a way too wide net being cast on things. And this bill, as Chief Potts, example that Chief Potts used, our bill would not have stopped or changed anything that was happening in that instance. So it is something that would still continue to allow law enforcement to do their job, which I want to have happen. But I also don't want just a wide open system where anybody's private data can be accessed without anyone having oversight, accountability, or transparency onto how this happens.
Representative Durant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is that data? What is received by when you query the license plate? What information is actually given to the peace officer? Okay, what is that? And what is it private? And what is that data? Because you're saying it's the same data and you didn't answer my question. So if a peace officer actually types in the license plate, okay, what information do I receive? And the LPR, when that information reads the license plate, what information does the peace officer get? What data is that? Okay, can you give me some specific data points that is given? What do I receive? What does the officer look at when they get that information?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Lieben, and Representative Durant. So as you well know, it depends on what the request of that data is. So if it's just a looking at a license plate number, then it's that the request gives you public facing data on that. So it's a license plate where the tabs are paid and what vehicle that license plate is attached to. But if you ask different queries, so what has been happening has been for very benign, wide-ranging investigatory request on things, then you get name, you get address, you get additional private information without any oversight and without anybody asking if that data was necessary for things.
Okay, I'm gonna, do you have more, Representative Durant? Because I have 1, 2, 3 more people on the list. Okay, go ahead, Representative Durant.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. I think you're confusing what is actually received for the information that's actually obtained from these requests. I don't understand why we automatically assume that all this information, all this private information about individuals are given to the peace officers or third party individuals without actually going into a separate system and looking at this. The thing is, when you run that LPR or when you run that license plate check, it's only limited information that you receive. You're going to have to verify that somewhere else. So what's going on right now is that I think you're confusing and conflating a lot of the issues that are going on here with not really the information that's received from these checks. So I guess I'm willing to work with you on this and work with this, but the registration is what you're gonna get. Okay. That little data. Okay.
I feel like that's what I said, yeah. Representative.
But you're also saying you're getting a lot more information about that, which is not right. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Next is Representative Moeller.
Madam Chair, and I do have a question for Chief Potts, if he can make his way up there. And thank you so much, Chair Tabke, for bringing this bill. I think it's really important. And I just want to be clear in understanding the Chief's opposition is based on the $2,500 a year annual audit. And I thought I heard you say because of that $2,500 audit, law enforcement agencies won't be able to use this technology because that $2,500 would be cost prohibitive. Could you please clarify if that's what your opposition is?
Mr. Potts.
Madam Chair and Representative Moeller, to clarify my position is that the bill would require audits to be done annually instead of biannually. 75% of our members are smaller than 20 officers, 50% are smaller than 10. If they are able to currently have LPR and can afford the cost of the technology and the ongoing expense of keeping it, it's challenging. I don't think they'll all be able to continue that if they're now required to do a $2,500 audit every year. So I am concerned about small agencies' ability to maintain the technology based on the annual audit requirement instead of biannual audit requirement.
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have some follow-up questions, but in the interest of time, I won't ask those now. I do know that many local agencies do request funding from their city councils to be able to use the technology in the first place. And it's just hard for me to understand why the $2,500 annual audit would be cost prohibitive when you talked about how great this technology is in helping find things like a kidnapped child. So with that, I'll leave it and we can talk offline.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moeller. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Tabke, for bringing this important legislation. I had a few points I wanted to make that I'll do quickly. First of all, we should not trust Flock. They are not a trustworthy company. If you've looked at the contracts that they enter into, they are hugely expansive and, we have very little control over what they're going to do with our data. And so I do not think that we should make decisions based on what they tell us. And I know that I was recently interviewed on this topic by a local news station and Flock kind of led them along and then at the last minute just canceled and refused to even answer questions that the public has about what they're doing with our data. So that is point number one. We should not trust Flock. Also, to get to Representative Durand's question, the issue isn't just the individual isolated data that might be pulled in one situation. It's that taken collectively, we are tracking people's movements as private law-abiding citizens. And with this ubiquitous data collection through automatic license plate readers, the authorities are able to determine what we are doing in our private lives. And that is really troubling. And that's why we created the ALPR reporting requirements in the first place. We, the people of Minnesota, deserve to have insights into how this data is being used and some control over how that data is being used. And lastly, just to kind of echo Chair Moeller, I think $2,500 a year is a price that city councils and local communities would be happy to pay in light of the utility of automatic license plate readers. This bill would not interfere with that utility, in my opinion, and so I just am strongly in support. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the BCA is going to be the gatekeeper of their information, correct? No?
Representative Tabke?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Binsbergen, no, the A1, that was the original part of the bill, yes, but that has been eliminated via the A1.
Okay. So
Representative Van Binsbergen.
My question is in regards to overall cost back to the state. Where, I don't see any fiscal notes. Can you give us some indication what you see this costing the state of Minnesota?
Representative Tabke.
Chair Liebling and Representative Van Binsbergen, the there is no cost to the state on this. This is data privacy and how local jurisdictions handle that data privacy. So there's no cost to the state with regard to this bill.
Yeah, and if I could just add, Mr. Sandy informs me that there is a preliminary fiscal note. It's not been released yet, but the bill, if the bill leaves this committee, it's going back to public safety. So the, I assume that that's where the fiscal note would be examined.
Yes, that is the committee of jurisdiction over the finance, yes.
So there,
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there might not be a specific cost to the state, but there's still a cost, right? I mean, this is going somewhere. There's someone's got to pay this bill, whether it's local.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative Binsberg. And so what this, as Chief Potts was talking about, there's the audit, which is already required biannually. So this is an additional audit every other year as the bill is written today. And it wouldn't need to stay that way, as I said. But no, this is making sure that we have the right, you know, toggle switches in the software configured properly so that Minnesotans' private data is not available to anybody who wants to access it across the world. And that has no cost to the state of Minnesota. That is good data practices for how we want our private data to be handled in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. All right, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tapke, thank you for all the good conversations we've had over this. And I think there's some common ground here. And I think you have reducing the number of days that non-investigative data can be kept. I think 48 hours is too short, but I think we can maybe be that we could probably lessen that 60-day. That was something that when this law was passed that gave me some heartburn. I think also I've also had conversations, not just with you, but with law enforcement and with other data folks that are concerned about this. And I think there's agreement that the statute needs to be revisited. It's been, I think, 2015, what's that, 10, 11 years since this became law. So I think there are some things that need to be tweaked. I had a bill drafted. I just got the jackets. So I think there are some things that we can do, and you have my commitment to work on this over the interim. I think the issues that you're raising are important. I'm just not sure that this is the best way to do it and address those issues. I also have concerns about sweeping in the private companies in the bill as well, and I know you're just really kind of asking them for signage and to commit to not sharing the information. I'm not sure that's a good precedent to start. But all of that said, I just want to say thank you for bringing the bill. Thank you for all the conversations we've had. And I really do want to work on this going forward. And I commit to doing that, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. And final word, Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Liebling, for hearing this bill. I think that as more Minnesotans learn as to about what is going on with regard to their data attached to their license plate, that they will be enraged as to what is happening with their own private data. What is happening across the state and across the country is just simply not right. And we want to, what this bill will do is help rein that in. I understand it's not perfect. And thank you very much, Chair Scott, for all of your conversations on things. Just a note, the 48-hour limit on that is based on what currently is in law for the troopers today. So that's where that came from. It wasn't just a number that plucked. It's in current use in the state of Minnesota. And so that's where that came from. But again, happy to change that. And again, this is a huge, huge issue that people of Minnesota need help on. And so I beg folks to let this move forward to public safety so that we can continue to work on it and incorporate issues that as they come up and make sure that Minnesota know what is happening with their data and have access, their private data not being accessed by anyone who wants to see it across the country.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tapke. And just before we vote and before I renew the motion, I guess I would just say I heard several members mention they want to work with the author. I think Chair Scott was clear. She means over the interim. But, you know, this bill is going to public safety. If people want to work with the author to get something done this year, the way to do that is not to vote, is not to get a roll call and vote no on the bill here in committee. Because when, as and I've said this before, when we vote on a bill in committee, you are voting to re-refer it. You are not saying this is a perfect bill, I support it in its current form, and I want it to pass in its current form. You are saying I'm moving it to the next committee. This bill would go to public safety. If we don't have enough votes to move it to public safety, the bill is essentially dead for the session. I don't know, I suppose it's always possible for coming from the Senate or something, but for all intents and purposes, the bill is dead and there's no opportunity to work on it for the rest of the session. So just so people are clear on that, so with that, I'm gonna renew my motion that House File 4205 as amended be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Chair Scott.
No.
Scott, no. Vice Chair Finke.
Aye.
Finke, aye. Vice Chair Hudson.
No.
Hudson, no. Representative Bliss.
No.
Bliss, no. Representative Curran.
Aye.
Curran, aye. Representative Duran.
No.
Duran, no. Representative Engen.
No.
Engen, no. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Feist, aye. Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Frazier, aye. Representative Mahmoud.
Aye.
Mahmoud, aye. Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Steer.
No.
Steer, no. Representative Van Binsbergen.
No.
Van Binsbergen, no. 7-7.
So there being seven ayes and seven nays, the bill, the motion does not prevail and the bill does not advance. Thank you.
Chairs.
Next we'll take up House File 3782, Representative Moeller. And Representative Moeller's motion is that House File 3782 be re-referred to the General Register. And there is also an A1 amendment. And Chair Moeller, did you want to put the amendment on and then discuss it as amended? Your preference?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. I'll just note that this amendment came from a question that Representative Steer asked in the Public Safety Committee and then follow up with Chair Novotny, just for some clarity that was needed in the bill, frankly. And so that's what the amendment does.
Okay. So then... Chair Moeller is moving the A1 amendment to get the bill in the proper order. Any discussion to the A1? All those in favor of adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is a result of some information that I learned after the tragic events of June 14th. I spoke with Colin Hortman, and he described to me the process that was involved with trying to get the Hortman house really cleaned up after those horrible events. A lot of chemical irritants were used in the home, and it was difficult to find out what was actually used, and that matters because how it's remediated is based on what chemicals were used. And then there were issues with how to get, who pays for that, and it dragged on for quite some time. And of course, it ended up getting resolved, and Colin wanted this bill to come forward, frankly, because he didn't want to see this happen to any other victims, where they had to wait this long just to get some simple information about what was deployed, and then get what they needed done for remediation. So I always say this is, you know, a bill in typical Hortman fashion because it's not going to impact their situation, but really is going to impact cases moving forward. Why this bill is here is because of the notwithstanding Chapter 13 language. So pretty narrow focus for this committee, and I am happy to stand for questions.
All right. Thank you, Chair Moeller. There are no testifiers signed up. Are there questions or comments from members? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Did I see hands? No? Okay. Okay. So not seeing anything. So Chair Moeller, do you want to say some final words?
Yeah, thank you. I'll just reference, there is a letter from Colin in your packets, and there is a separate commerce bill that's related more to the insurance piece. So just if you see that on the agenda, there are two separate bills related to this issue that are moving forward. And I really want to thank him again for bringing this issue to our attention.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So with that, Chair Moeller would renew her motion that House File 3782 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, we have House File 4081, Representative Greenman. Welcome to the committee, and since Representative Greenman is not on the committee, I will move House File 4081 to get it before the committee, and the intention is to lay the bill over.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is that correct? Okay. and there is no amendment in the packet. So, Representative Greenman, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 4081 is the policy banning assault weapons that we heard in public safety a couple weeks ago. This bill bans semi-automatic military-style assault weapons made for the battlefield and sets up a certification system through the BCA for legacy weapons after the ban goes into effect. The bill as introduced was silent on the classification of that data that was created and maintained, that will be created and maintained as part of a certification process. To make the bill consistent with other data privacy classifications under Minnesota's permit to carry policy and gun purchase policy, we have heard and adopted an amendment in public safety to classify certification data as private. That language is incorporated into this bill on lines 6.15 to 6.18, and it classifies any data on individuals collected, created, received, maintained, or disseminated by the BCA or as private data under the Data Practices Act. This is the same private classification, as I said, of permit to carry on individuals currently in Minnesota law. It ensures consistency and protects the privacy of individual data that will be received and maintained as part of the certification process. And that's the reason that it is here in Judiciary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Greenman. We have one testifier signed up, Anna Leamy. Welcome to the committee. And just to note, you know, this is a data practices committee, so that is the portion of the bill that we're discussing today. Welcome. Please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Anna Leamy, Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. We do recognize the provisions within the jurisdiction of this committee, so I'll keep my comments real brief. With respect to those provisions, this bill classifies certain data relating to firearm ownership and certification as private data on individuals under Minnesota's data practice framework. In general, we agree that personal information related to lawful firearm ownership should not be public data. Firearm ownership records are sensitive personal information, and treating such information as private is consistent with longstanding public safety and privacy considerations. However, while classifying such data as private is the correct approach to protecting individual privacy, that limited point does not mitigate the broader concerns raised by the bill as a whole. House File 4081 would impose sweeping prohibitions affecting commonly owned firearms owned by law-abiding Minnesotans. It is for this reason that we respectfully urge the committee to vote no and prevent House File 4081 from advancing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Is there discussion to the bill? Member discussion? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, it's my understanding that this bill or a clone of it was heard in public safety. Has there been any substantive changes between when it was heard in public safety and what you're presenting to us today?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we, you were on the committee when we heard it in public safety and adopted this amendment. This is the only other time that it's been heard, and so there hasn't been any changes. This is a version of the bill that includes the amendments we adopted in public safety.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. My memory is that we took a roll call vote and it did not pass out of public safety. I have seen no reason to change that, so I will ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Well, we're laying the bill over, Representative Hudson. Are there any other discussion? Representative Steer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm 100% against this, but I would like for the public, can Nathan Hopkins please go over what it means to lay a bill over? It doesn't mean the bill passes. I just would like to clarify what it means to lay a bill over.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so when a bill is laid over, it just remains in the committee's possession and does not, it's not referred out of committee in a committee report.
Other discussion? Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Greenman, thank you. I appreciate you stopping by the Judiciary Committee today. So I think as we do hopefully make progress in these conversations, we are looking at the data pieces that are important pieces that we can't overlook. Even though we may have some big disagreements on a policy level right now, I really appreciate the attention to detail on what would need to happen should any version of anything pass, what would happen with that data. So thank you for that.
All right. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Rep. Greenman for your work on this bill and the gun violence prevention bills that have been before the body this year. And I guess I just want folks to know that we'll continue to work on this. You know, we're not really getting a lot of good faith work to try to solve this problem this year, and that's okay. Like, we all have our election certificates, but we won't. I just want to like make sure that the people who are trying to find their way forward after suffering great tragedy know and hear that we are absolutely committed to this work. Well beyond just this one year. So thank you for it. If we have to come back next year and do it, that's what we'll do.
All right, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, thank you for having a stop in our committee. I wasn't in public safety, so I didn't have a chance to hear the debate there. I'm sure it was a robust and lively debate, as usual for public safety. That's the way it goes in that committee. See you there this afternoon. But I just want to say, you know, it is important for the community to see, even though this bill is being laid over, meaning it will be stuck in this committee, meaning it's not going to move forward, meaning we're not going to put policy in place that will potentially save a lot of lives. It is important for the broader community to see that legislators such as yourself that live in a community where the most recent tragedy has happened are doing the work, bringing legislation to have the conversation, to try to put something in place that could save lives. So to all of those families out there that are still mourning and grieving the loss of your kids and your loved ones, know that there are legislators here, like Representative Greenman, that are absolutely doing the work to try and put things in place to prevent tragedies like this from happening in the future. And I thank you for doing the work.
All right, any final word, Representative Greenman?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the stop. I will say that on this bill, you know, families, we've heard from families and survivors and 69% of Minnesotans who want us to take action to keep these weapons of war off our street, and we will continue doing that as our constituents and the public demand and require. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Greenman. So House File 4081 is laid over. Yeah, way ahead of schedule. Yeah, okay, so we've got some time. We can admire the next bill. House File 4138, Chair Scott. And Chair Scott's motion will be that House File 4138 be re-referred to Commerce, Finance, and Policy. And there is an amendment. Let me just shuffle my papers here and get things out of the way. And there is an A2 amendment. And Chair Scott, is that your amendment? And did you want to adopt that at the outset?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that is my amendment. And I'd like to just do an brief oral amendment, as I mentioned to you earlier,
okay,
on this
yep.
amendment.
Yep.
And that would be striking on lines 1.16 the language that says, or is about, and then on 1.17, to engage in.
Okay, so I think we can just incorporate that amendment. We don't have to actually vote on it separately, but just to make sure everyone understands. So on line 1.16 of the A2 amendment, after the comma, the words or is about, and then the next line on line 1.17, the words to engage in are stricken.
That's
correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And is that good enough, staff? Okay, yep. So we're going to, Chair Scott wants to incorporate that change into the A2. And so we will vote on the A2 as amended by that change.
Yes, please.
So Chair Scott, did you want to just then vote on the A2 and then discuss the bill as amended?
Yes, please.
Okay, so any discussion to the A2 amendment? We're okay doing that, Representative Feist?
Really important clarification. Will the amendment also delete those two extra commas? Usually when we have like amendments, it says like delete the comma. Anyway.
I don't know. This sounds like something for the revisers bill, maybe.
Let's prevent that from happening with the revisers bill. Let's have nonpartisan staff just make sure on the record that we've got the commas were needed or not needed.
Let's see, Mr. Hopkins, should we take out the two commas? Yes, he's saying yes. Okay, so we're taking out that. Thank you, Representative Feist. That includes striking the two commas. All right, we want to make sure we get our commas correct. So all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the amended amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Social media is consuming our lives. We know that social media platforms are addictive by design, and that is reflected in teen usage of social media. The Office of the U.S. Surgeon General reports that 95% of 13 to 17-year-olds are on social media platforms, and a 2023 Gallup poll found that teens spend on average 20% of their day on social media platforms. In 2025, Minnesota Student Survey, nearly one in five Minnesota high school students reported being on social media between the hours of 12 a.m. and 5 a.m., five school nights a week. Social media platforms target ads and content to users based on a variety of factors, including an estimate of age determined after time spent on the platform. I can't think of another product for which teens sign a contract, especially one which takes, on average, 20% of each day. When teens enter into this contract, the platforms monetize and sell the minors' data to other platforms and for targeted commercial advertising. As parents and as lawmakers, we should not be okay with that. We have the power to enforce consumer protections around products used by Minnesotans, especially our kids. My remarks highlight just a brief overview of how youth are being exploited by unfair trade practices, and those legislature should require responsibility from platforms to protect Minnesota youth online. House File 3418 seeks to mitigate some of these practices with a twofold approach. Covered social media platforms, as defined by our bill, as platforms which made $1 billion in advertising revenues worldwide in one or more of the preceding 3 years, must use the same age estimation technology currently being used to target content and ads to instead protect our youth. If age estimation technology predicts that a user is 15 or under, verifiable parental consent must be obtained to have an account with the platform. Verifiable parental consent already exists under 1998 federal law, the Child Online Privacy and Protection Act, or commonly known as COPPA. The implementing regulations have also been outlined by the Federal Trade Commission. Either a parent or legal guardian can give verifiable parental consent. Number two, if verifiable parental consent is given, the user experience for the youth must be different from an adult account user experience. No targeted commercial advertising to the youth user, and no addictive features present in the user experience, including infinite scroll, autoplay video, or metrics displayed such as likes on the account, likes count. This bill does not ban users from having social media. Instead, it requires a parent or guardian to approve of social media contractual agreements. It also requires a different user experience for youth. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to testifiers, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. So the first person on the list that I have is Maggie Hange. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Liebling, Chair Scott, and members of the committee, my name is Maggie Hange, and I am here from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota, to share our support for House File 4138, the Stop the Harms of Addictive Social Media Act. Please vote yes. Social media platforms are designed to be addictive, and clearly their business model is working. Kids spend huge portions of their day online, and they are replacing in-person relationships with online interactions, which is leading to mental health challenges like anxiety and depression. According to a 2025 Pew Research study, 48% of teens say that social media has a mostly negative effect on people their age, a 16% increase in just 3 years. Additionally, studies link Instagram usage, especially in teen girls, to struggles with body image and self-worth. Instagram also has the highest percentage of adolescent users reporting cyberbullying. We should not sit back and let big tech harm the lives of our children. They deserve better. This bill would help alleviate these problems through two key parts, as was mentioned. It would require verifiable parental consent for child accounts, and it would require that social media platforms be less addictive by design for youth under 16 years old. Nowhere else do we allow minors to enter a contract, not for sports, camps, or school outings. Yet they are allowed to sign over their data to big tech, and sometimes without their parents even knowing. The kids then become the products off which the platforms can profit. As adults, we should not be content with this predatory business model. Parents deserve the right to consent to their child's account creation. But one could argue, shouldn't parents just be better parents and limit the amount of time their kids are spending online if they feel the need? The reality is, not all parents are in a position to monitor their children as closely as they would like. They may work long hours or be a single parent just trying to keep up. Ensuring that the platform is designed to be less addictive will help all children. If a parent provides consent, he or she can do so knowing that the most addictive features, targeted advertising, infinite scroll, autoplay video, and more, will be prohibited from the child accounts. This puts all children on the same playing field while simultaneously stifling a lot of the addictive appeal. Let's not leave it to these platforms to self-regulate. Other countries and states are taking steps to protect youth online. Minnesota should follow suit. Please support this bill and ensure a safer digital environment for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Jerry and Gianna Cox. Welcome to the committee. If you would, you're both going to speak, I take it?
Okay.
Yes. Just please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony, and then we'll
thank
do
you.
The other one.
My name is Jerry Cox, and I'm the parent of two daughters. I want to encourage you all to vote in support of House File 4138. My oldest daughter is now 20. Let me go back really fast. I am grateful for my mom. She used to limit our TV viewing time in the 1970s and 80s. And thankfully, when I was 15 years old, the MTV Video Music Channel of 1983 had no way to keep me plugged in after I got bored. So my oldest daughter, again, is 20. I remember that she was able to obtain an Instagram account at the age of 12 without our knowledge or permission, and even before she had a phone. It was easy. She discovered that she could access the internet from her bedroom using her bright toy pink Amazon Kids Kindle. It was a gift from relatives that was only meant to encourage her to read books. Both girls quickly figured out how to manipulate their Amazon Kindle accounts, change passwords without parental consent. From that point, my eldest created an Instagram account to see what her classmates were posting. My husband and I only found out about 6 months later when a friend called to ask if we knew that our 12-year-old was on Instagram. We are thankful that she did not get harmed on the platform, but it certainly created big arguments and stress for us at home. We removed the Kindles and we explained our concerns. We waited to give the girls phones. Our other daughter, Gianna, is 15 and she is here today. And she likes watching YouTube on the family computer. My husband and I made a tough decision to not allow her to have the other social media accounts on her phone after our experience with our oldest daughter. Not surprisingly, our family has had a lot of these discussions over screen time, safeguards, and my husband and I are navigating this new frustrating world that we never had to when growing up. Parenting in the age of portable 24/7 screens, entertainment, and advertising. I would love it if the social media platforms would realize that they might gain customers by actually helping us parents. Since they don't seem to want to do that, though, they don't seem to be doing that. I am asking for you all with this request. Please help parents of minors under 16 by setting in place a few simple things, like verified parental consent for a social media account, and having that would have at least let us know that she wanted to be on Instagram when she was 12. The ability to set time limitations and prohibiting addictive features like infinite scroll. I would encourage you to support HF 4138. Thanks for your time today.
All right, thanks for your testimony. And Gianna, welcome to the committee. Just state your name and go ahead.
My name is Gianna Cox. My mom always told me to be careful when playing around the street. If you don't know to look both ways, you risk getting hit by a car. It's the same with giving children unmonitored and unfiltered access to social media. By handing your young child a device with unrestricted social media apps, you hand them a gateway to things like screen addiction, self-comparison, and depression. A child's mind is very impressionable. In childhood, we are extremely influenced by our surroundings. That's why it is important to teach kids how to read and count from early ages, because these are the very things that everything else they will learn in their later years is built upon. However, having social media from a young age gives kids the impression that societal image and keeping up with the latest internet trend are more important than their schooling. Unfiltered social media access exposes kids to stuff they might not be able to understand. This can encourage children to do their own research on the unknown topic and help them learn, but some stuff is better left unknown. Addictive features that many social media apps have, specifically the infinite scrolling feature and having one video after another play automatically, give the brain a dopamine hit each time you watch a new video. This helps to draw you into the app and boost interactions. But, as previously stated, a child's mind is very impressionable. While it is more dangerous for younger children, I myself have felt the effects of unrestricted infinite scrolling. Sometimes I have felt myself getting bored of the tiring scrolling. My brain has been so accustomed to getting that dopamine hit at a regular interval that it's hard to tear myself away, even though I want to do something else. Children will spend hours watching short-form video content to pass the time. Because of this, their brains are being taught to process information very quickly, and oftentimes they might not even remember what they have just watched. This becomes a nightmare for teachers everywhere, as the children they teach have been shortening their attention span. Using social media without safeguards is damaging to a child's mental health. So why aren't we safeguarding children like me? Please help my generation by passing HF 4138. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Kia Fanberg. Welcome to the committee. If you would just state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Liebling and members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Kaya Fanberg, and I'm a high school student in Minnesota. I'm here today to give my support for the Stop Harms from Addictive Social Media bill. Social media is a complex issue that has had an emotional, physical, and mental health impact on my generation. Today, I'd like to talk about social media addiction and its impact on teen self-worth. Social media addiction decreases interactions between teens and their peers, causing them to miss out on making memories and long-lasting relationships. Teens are more engaged with their screens and phones than the people standing right in front of them. This is easily observed in schools. Before school, at lunch, and after school, teens are often looking at social media platforms instead of interacting with their friends. While these apps claim to make our world smaller and more connected, many people my age feel disconnected and lonely. As teens are more frequently exposed to social media and its addictive features, their brains begin to resemble a brain hooked on a highly addictive drug. In fact, according to a 2025 Pew Research poll, 9 out of 10 teens use at least one social media platform. Social media has become a part of my generation's lives in unavoidable areas, such as school, projects, and sports recruiting. This causes our performance and self-worth to be constantly measured in an AI world that blurs the lines of truth and reality, a world where social media companies have little accountability. Using addictive features to lure teens into social media at the expense of our mental health and development is an important public policy concern that this bill addresses. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to some testifiers on Zoom. And first, we have Megan Stokes.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. State your name, please, and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, for the record, my name is Megan Stokes. I am the State Policy Director at the Computer and Communications Industry Association. Good morning, Chair Scott, Chair Liebling, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. The CCIA shares the goals of improving safety online for young people. Our members have invested heavily in parental controls, privacy protections, and tools that allow families to tailor online experiences to a child's developmental needs. However, House File 4138 would likely undermine youth safety rather than enhance it. First, the bill's scope is narrow and unclear. It relies on vague concepts such as a platform's primary purpose and undefined addictive features. Unclear standards make it difficult to determine whether this law applies. As a result, some services may fall outside the bill's scope entirely, creating patchwork protections in an ecosystem where teens frequently move between platforms. Second, the bill would require age estimation systems that raise some privacy concerns. Because the bill does not clearly define what qualifies as a commercially reasonable age assurance, companies may feel compelled to adopt intrusive verification systems that collect sensitive personal information. This runs counter to widely recognized data minimization principles and could increase the risk of data breaches. We've seen this with Hinge and with the T app earlier this past summer. Furthermore, the requirement to update age estimations every 100 hours would effectively force platforms to implement location-based tracking. Finally, restrictions on personalized or algorithmically ranked features could unintentionally weaken safety tools. Those systems are often used to prioritize helpful content, filter out age-inappropriate material, limit risky interactions between adults and teens. Broad restrictions on those tools could actually make it harder, not easier, for services to protect young users. For these reasons, we respectfully urge the committee to oppose House File 4138 and instead pursue more comprehensive solutions that strengthen parental oversight, protect privacy, and provide consistent safeguards for teens online. Thank you for your time and consideration.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. And please, if you can stay available in case there are questions, that would be great. Next, we have Nathan Trail. Welcome to the committee. If we see you, hopefully we'll hear you. And please state your name and go ahead.
Thank you. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, we are.
Thank you. Chair Scott, Chair Liebling, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Trail. I'm the
Vice President of State Government Affairs at the Information Technology Industry Council, or ITI. Thank you very much for having me here today. While ITI and our members certainly share the important goal of improving youth online safety, we must respectfully oppose HF 4138 as written. We believe the bill could undermine youth safety rather than enhancing it. It raises significant technical, constitutional, and policy concerns, including restrictions on safety-enhancing platform features. The bill's scope is both narrow and vague, creating definitional ambiguity around terms such as primary purpose and addictive interface features. This language could allow many widely used platforms to argue that they are outside of the scope of the law, resulting in uneven coverage across the online ecosystems. Teens move quickly between apps and regulating only certain services while others remain ineffective does not provide consistent protections and may also raise constitutional concerns. The bill would also restrict personalized and algorithmically ranked experiences, which are often used to promote safer online environments. These systems help prioritize helpful content, filter out age-inappropriate material, and limit risky interactions between teens and adults. Broad restrictions on these tools could unintentionally make it harder for platforms to identify and remove harmful content. For these reasons, we respectfully urge the committee to oppose HF 4138 and instead pursue more comprehensive solutions that provide stronger protections for young users while maintaining workable safeguards for families and developers. And with that, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And please stick around if you can. Amy Boss.
Welcome. Yes, good morning, members of the committee. My name is Amy Boss. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs at NetChoice, a trade association dedicated to free speech and free enterprise online, testifying in respectful opposition to HF 4138. We all want Minnesota kids to be safer online, but we believe this bill falls far short of achieving that goal. The core problem is that in order to comply with this bill's age estimation mandates, platforms would be forced to build what amounts to a digital ID system for every Minnesota user. After 25 hours of use, a platform must estimate a user's age with 80% confidence. At 50 hours, 90% confidence, with the requirement resetting every 100 hours. The only way to meet these thresholds in practice is through data collection, location-based and behavioral tracking, and ultimately, we believe, through a government-issued ID from both minors and parents. This bill doesn't protect children's data. It mandates the collection of it, and every identity profile created is another target, one breach away from exposure to the bad actors Minnesota families are worried about. The constitutional concerns are equally serious. The Supreme Court has repeatedly struck down age verification and parental consent mandates as violations of the First Amendment, including in Reno versus ACLU, Ashcroft versus ACLU, and Brown versus Entertainment Merchants Association. In addition, in Moody versus NetChoice, the court reaffirmed that personalized feeds are protected expressive activity, and this bill directly burdens that protected speech. Finally, I do want to mention that the premise underlying this bill risks misunderstanding the problem. Addiction is a clinical term. Much of what is described as addiction is more accurately habitual use. Treating it as addiction can backfire, fostering guilt and a sense of helplessness in young users rather than encouraging healthy manageable engagement. We do urge the committee to oppose this bill as written. We stand ready to work with you on solutions that genuinely protect kids without forcing Minnesota families into a mandatory digital ID system. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. So those are the people I have for testifiers on the list. So we will move to member discussion, and first up is Representative Engen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Co-Chair Scott, for bringing this bill. I would have liked for anybody who was in opposition to this bill to come and actually have the gall to testify in front of us, because we have a room full of kids right now, in a generation that includes myself, that have been completely destroyed by purposeful corporate negligence. Let's say that first and foremost. This is corporate negligence that they have actively turned a blind eye to.
in the destruction that they've caused. And it's not just on Facebook, it's not just on Instagram, it's not just on those platforms, Snapchat. It's now on Minecraft and Roblox, which children as young as 5 years old are being hooked on before then being exploited by the most disgusting sexual predators that this earth has to offer. And they've turned a blind eye to it, hiding behind Section 230 federally so that they can avoid any and all liability. And it's wrong. It's disgusting. They should be here and they should be willing to work with us in forming a bill that would be to their liking as well as to the intent of yours and myself. I want to keep working on this. I want to make sure that that $1 billion number doesn't inadvertently leave out some of the actors who are also hurting and damaging our kids. But this is a great start, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Engen, I know we've agreed on some things, but I don't think we've ever so passionately agreed. So I'm with you. Everything Rep. Engen just said. You know, when we came into this hearing, I was planning on asking some technical questions about how this would work. But the testimony and the letters provided by the big tech have led me to just passionately support your bill. Just to quote them, they said they share our goals. They said, quote, "We all want Minnesota kids to be safer online. I do not believe that. I just think they want our children to spend time on their product." A couple other points. Parental controls really are ineffective. Mom of a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old, very complicated. Like, I can't figure out how to do it. I sort of did it, but then we, like, turned off the controls for my son when we went on a trip, and then we were like, I don't remember how to turn them back on. So we just trust them. Neither of my kids have social media. I'm very happy about that. I think about what they did in Australia, where they just banned social media for kids under 16. And, you know, there's, like this is a complicated area to legislate, but we have to do something. And I believe that even if we do something, and maybe it gets litigated and maybe it gets struck down, that when we see that there is bipartisan support and passion around this type of legislation, hopefully that will encourage these large companies to change their business practices over time. So I believe that doing something, even if it is imperfect, is really important. And lastly, I just want to kind of talk about the collective action problem that Jonathan Haidt talks about in his book, Anxious Generation, that when you talk to kids, like we've heard from here today, they don't like what social media is doing with their lives and their relationships, but when you ask them, do you want to give it up, it's very hard for them to do so when other kids have it. My son almost missed a track meet because they only were telling kids where to go on Snapchat, and he doesn't have Snapchat, and that's stupid, that he almost missed his meet. But when you ask kids if everybody gave up social media, is that something that they would want? Then the data shows that they actually would. So they have a collective action problem. That means that we need to act. And so I know that this bill needs additional work and conversation, but I do not think that we should let these statements or the letters from these big technology companies bully us into just standing down and thinking that it's too hard. This is important. So thank you.
Representative Mueller.
Madam Chair, and thank you to Chair Scott for bringing this bill. I also support it, but I just have to sit here, especially after the Representative Greenman bill, where we heard the reasons for this that I heard are protecting children, holding the industry accountable, and considering mental health concerns of youth. And when we talk about guns being the leading cause of death for children and adolescents in an industry that is acting with corporate negligence, they have the technology they can use to ensure that guns are only used by the lawful owner of that gun, and the mental health experiences of children who have lived through shootings, who have to live life in fear of being shot, have active shooter drills. I just really want to implore my colleagues to have the same passion for protecting children in those situations as you have for this bill. So again, thank you for bringing this. I'm glad to support it.
All right, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have much more to add than my two colleagues. I do want to just recognize one of the things that the testifiers said, which is that, you know, their kids got Kindles and quickly manipulated them to be able to do the things they wanted to be able to do on them. I think, you know, all of our children now have iPads in school, and those iPads have protective software to make sure they don't do the things with them that those kids do every single day on those iPads, right? I want to make sure that we have solutions in place that will protect kids in the way we want to. And one of the testifiers from the industry said they want a more comprehensive solution, and Representative Feist already mentioned this, but I very firmly intend to bring legislation next year to ban social media for people who are 16 and under. Australia did it. I think this is a toxic and terrible product. It is not a product. Our children are products. I don't know if sometimes we think of these things as products, but they're free, and the only intention of social media is to scrape more data out of humanity to be sold for profit by companies. And it's actually also as addictive for adults as it is for children. Like, there's no, we're all susceptible to this. It's a huge problem, and I think that we should follow our friends to the south and just get rid of this for kids.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Scott, for the bill, and I appreciate the conversations ahead of time. And just to note from some comments, both from testifiers, thank you for being here, by the way, much appreciated, and some comments from colleagues that social media is a toxic place. It really, truly is a toxic and damaging place, and we have the opportunity right now to protect kids through legislation. But I also want to just center what kids have been saying in this conversation with us here as well, and that's that we also all have a role to play in what we contribute to social media and whether or not we contribute to toxicity on social media. And the things that we as adults post on social media, even with bills like this, may still be available to kids. And they're taking in the information from all of us as adults. So as we have this conversation about how damaging social media can be, I really want us to take a moment to self-reflect into how we may be contributing to that toxic environment for not just children, but for adults as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So there's no one else on the list, but I have a few questions and comments, and Chair Scott. So I certainly agree with the problem. I think that there are some questions that I have. One, could you help me with the age mechanism in the bill? So I don't know if I missed this before, but it's and some of the testifiers have said that people have to give information to be able to do this. And you know, just speaking personally, I really do not give my birth date out online, and you know, and other kinds of information. And so this seems to be requiring that, or am I reading this wrong, Chair Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill does say that they would provide just their birth date. But as far as the other things for age verification, these platforms already have that technology. They know darn good and well after a few hours of our kids being online how old they are. So to answer your question, yes, and the technology is there. It's no mystery. It's not a hard thing for them to do, the social media platforms.
Okay, yeah, Chair Scott, that was kind of another, it kind of in the bill talks about them estimating the age and all of that stuff, and some of the testifiers also talked about having to do track location. Well, you're shaking your head, but... you know, I know that if this bill were to pass, it only applies in Minnesota. So, of course, they need to know that you're in Minnesota to apply the legislation, I assume. Because when I was traveling and I was in, I think, Indiana, I saw on my phone you get a notice that says, you know, for certain things you have to age verify because it knows you're in Indiana, right? So okay. I think there is something to that. So I just would like to hear your comment on that piece of it.
Frankly, Madam Chair, thank you for the question. I hadn't considered that, but so a kid is somewhere in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for that. So, you know, and I have a couple of another question for you, Chair Scott. Just from media, I'm aware that there has been litigation against the tech companies on the basis of having a defective product. which is kind of the way you seem to be going here in the bill. And I just wondered if you had any knew anything about that or if that's related to what you're doing here. I mean, it's kind of a new approach to this that litigants are using to, you know, that suing them for having a defective product, an addictive product, or, you know, I don't know the details, but I just wonder if is that kind of where this came from or, you know, because this is a very different kind of approach than what we've seen in the past.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. And the reason for the new approach with this bill really is to go to the design itself of the social media platforms. And so that's and that's the continuous scrolling, the videos that play without you engaging to have it play, the features like how many people have liked your post, those sorts of things. So this is really getting at the design aspect of it. And in speaking with Rep. Bonner, who we all know is kind of an expert in this stuff, that's the thing that she said is really most important in whatever we do is to getting at the design. So I don't know if the folks from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, if they have any additional comments on kind of the genesis of the bill or not. But that's really what this bill is trying to get at. And in doing that, if we get at the design piece of it, then we're going to be less likely to run afoul of First Amendment issues.
Right. I think that's kind of is the reason that the litigation is taking that angle as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question for our I heard two of our testifiers online from the industry say that we need more comprehensive solutions. And I wonder what they have in mind for their more comprehensive solutions. And I wonder if one of them wouldn't mind expounding on that. And I think it was, I think both Megan Stokes and Nathan Trail both said that. So I don't know, is Megan Stokes, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, could you answer that question for me? When you say we need a more comprehensive solution,
sure.
What are you thinking about?
So I am, and I feel bad I don't have the bill numbers or the law right off the top of my head, but there has been some really great work done around digital curriculum that's been looking at teaching adolescents both in school, but also it's bringing in parents, and it's talking about social media, how to use that effectively, if at all. And it's also talking about parental controls for the parents to help run through what is the newest, what is the latest. So Virginia, Florida, New Jersey, and I apologize for not knowing the bill numbers off the top of my head, have all passed this and have been updating this curriculum pretty regularly. They've also been including information around AI and AI literacy, which has been very neat to see, and also to see students get involved in creating policies around the use of AI in terms of schoolwork and that sort of thing. So it's very, very interesting to see. I really like that approach. And then I am also a parent who's in the thick of this with a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old. And it is one where my local library has received grants to be able to help do the sort of training around what is social media and how it is so much faster than a parent might actually think, right? And it's just one of those where I think it's one of those where everyone kind of has a role. So, sorry, I get excited about digital citizenship.
All right, so I'm understanding then that your comprehensive solution is basically education. And it really strikes me from that this really is, Chair Moeller, very parallel to the gun discussion. Because in the gun space, I know a lot of folks say just educate people, just teach them how to be around guns, just, you know, and that, you know, solves the problem in some people's minds. And apparently that's what the industry, or at least what this testifier is putting forward as a more comprehensive solution. And I guess I would beg to differ. Not that we shouldn't educate people, but I don't view that as a more comprehensive solution. So I think, you know, we will, if there are no other, I'll give Chair Scott the final word, but I just would say too, before she closes us out here that, and and we'll vote on the bill to move the bill. But so this bill is, as my comment on one of the previous bills, that when you're voting a bill out of committee, you are not saying this is a perfect bill. You're saying it should go to its next committee. So I just want to state, you know, I do have some concerns about this. I have some concerns about the privacy aspect of it, Chair Scott. I don't, you know, I turn off my location thing, and I know a lot of people probably do because we, you know, it is terrible how they collect your information, and it, whoever said here that's an information collection machine, that is what it is. But I don't know if this is the perfect solution yet, but I'm willing to vote for it to move it out of committee to the next committee so it can continue to be worked on. And so I just want to say that, you know, I intend to vote for the bill, and I'll give you the final word, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the good discussion today. And, you know, there's just some data that some statistics that I've learned as I was researching for this bill. And one of the most troublesome one is that every day as many as 100,000 children receive sexual harassment or on social media platforms, including sextortion. That should upset us all and be more of a desire for a bill like this. Also, just want to point to, you know, the differences that I may have with our Attorney General. He is on top of this issue. And he had a report a few years ago on the how social media and devices can be harmful to our kids. And he's taken on Meta. He's taken on TikTok. And he's not doing that without basing it on some science. And there's some really for the tech industry to get up here and say that it's not addictive when you put a kid's brain on a monitor and it lights up like a Christmas tree, like a cocaine addict, when they're looking at social media. I don't see how you can even defend that statement. So, members, I appreciate the discussion. I will continue to take input on this. And one thing, Madam Chair, is there's some folks in the room, and I've told them, they asked that the definition for social media platform be that we have in this bill be changed to the one that's in current statute, and I'm happy to make that change in the next committee. So with that,
okay.
Thanks again for the discussion.
Thank you. And one thing, I'm taking back what I said. I'm sorry about giving you the last word. I had noticed in your amendment when we did the oral amendment to the amendment that we might be missing an or.
Oh, okay.
So if you have that in front of you. So now with the change in it, it reads, starting on line 1.15, it reads, if the Attorney General has reasonable cause to believe that any covered social media platform is engaging in any knowing or reckless violation. I think we want to say has engaged in or okay. Is engaging in.
I would kick that over to Mr. Hopkins just to
Mr.
make sure
Hopkins,
that.
Mr. Hopkins, are you following?
Is engaged in.
Madam Chair, yes, that was something that my colleagues and I did notice after the committee took its vote, and that's something that we can update, I think, in the committee report.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. So then I think then we could incorporate the change in, so on line 1.16, we would be inserting the word or after the comma on that line. So it would read or is engaging in. Chair Scott, you're okay with that?
Yes, that's fine, Madam Chair. Yep.
So we'll do that for the committee report. Okay, very good. So with that, Chair Scott renews her motion that House File 4138 as amended be re-referred to Commerce, Finance, and Policy. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Commerce.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I am shocked that we're finished a few minutes early, but we are, so we stand adjourned.